Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This episode of Creative Control Daily is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Well, now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. If you could benefit from more confidence where it counts, Blue Chew is the fast and easy way to enhance your performance. Blue Chew is prescribed online by licensed physicians, so you don't have to go to the doctor's office or wait in line at the pharmacy. It ships right to your door in a discreet package. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. And best of all, there's no more awkwardness. And right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code CREATIVE. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code CREATIVE, to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring Creative Control Daily.
Hello and welcome to Creative Control with Joe Feeney. This is episode 81, and I'd like to welcome back to the show for a second appearance, former WWF, WCW, and TNA creative writer, and that is Professor Ed Ferrara. Ed, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome, Joe. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me back. Refresh my memory. What? This is show 81. What was the show that I was on first?
12.
12. Yeah, okay. So. Yeah. It's been a little while.
Yeah, you were on right in the beginning. You know, I had only had a handful episodes, but you came on and gave me a chance, and I appreciated it. You know, and I'm glad to have you back on today.
Well, I'm glad to be back on. It's been a while. It's been a couple of months since I've been on any podcast because I've been so busy lately. Just the fall is usually a killer for me with my classes, so I haven't had time to do any. And you and I have been trying to make this happen for a little while now. We've both had to push it back a couple of times, so now we finally made it. So here we are.
Yeah, and what a crazy week to get to recording it. This is Thursday, and actually I'll probably be releasing it later today. So, of course, the week of the presidential election, and without getting into any politics, I just would like to ask you, did you ever think a WWE Hall of Famer would be the president of the United States?
Did I ever think? No, I really didn't. And I can't say that it fills me with pride.
I was going to say, you got to go down that list of the Hall of Fame a little bit and say, geez, who else could it have been? Well, really nobody.
Yeah.
Bret Hart might be Prime Minister of Canada or something, but that's
maybe Jesse. Jesse, I could totally see Jesse.
Maybe off that hot run deal in 99 when he became the governor, but I think he kind of cooled off. They did the conspiracy show. I don't know if he would have as much as he would have back then when everybody knew, like, hey, there's the guy who just won the governorship and everything.
Right, exactly. He's not a big enough TV star to get the presidency.
Yeah, they don't seem to let him on too many shows anymore, especially live ones, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But okay, when you were on the previous episode, we talked about how you got into wrestling, your training. You actually trained as a wrestler, and your time with WWF, and a little bit of WCW. So to go back a little bit to that time period in 99, just before yourself and Vince Russo left the WWF, Chris Jericho debuted. And from reading his books and hearing some of his interviews and things like that, it seems like when you guys left, he was kind of floating around there. They didn't really know what to do with him. Would you agree with that? And what did you guys see in Chris Jericho at that time? And what do you think? How do you think you would have pushed him?
Trying to think, because it's been a long time since I've even thought about that. He came in right at the time that we were about to leave. I mean, we didn't know we were about to leave. It just happened that way. Mm-hmm. And I had very little contact with him. I think I maybe talked to him twice backstage at the first taping that he was at, but because it was his big debut and everything, I was producing a lot of the other stuff, and Vince was kind of in charge with everything that he was doing. So I had limited contact with Jericho. Vince had the majority of the contact with him. But I mean, you know, we had been building up the whole countdown thing for his debut. We wanted to push him to the moon. As far as specific storylines, I do not remember what storylines we were working on for him, but I do know that we had him figured very prominently because we felt that he could be a major star for us. Mm-hmm. And you know, I guess we were right, because I understand he did somewhat well for himself after we left. So I think that his talent, you know, was what pushed him to the top. And no matter who had the pencil at that time, he, you know, it would be a fool's errand to try and do anything other than just let him run and let him be the star that he is.
Yeah, I think, you know, a few people remember his name, you know, here and there, you know, but
I understand. Yeah, he keeps trying. The kid might make it someday.
Yeah. I know we spoke previously about how you're not currently watching the product, but he still, to this day in 2016, he's probably himself and Kevin Owens, they do their they have like a partnership.
Yeah.
It's the best thing on Raw. I mean, it's not saying much really, but it is, and he's still, you know, he's still great, especially you know, they're doing great comedic stuff now, and they're probably the best thing on the show.
I agree with you. I mean, I'm not watching currently. I had been watching up till like about a week before Hell in the Cell, and then I got busy, and it was not that much of a priority for me to stay. And I only watched Raw anyway. I think there's way too much of their product out there right now, and they're glutting the market. So I it makes everything mean a little bit less as far as I'm concerned, and that's why I'm not watching it right now. I'm not. It's not like it's a political stance. I'm saying that's it. I'm not watching WWE anymore. It's more a matter of, you know, I've got better things to do right now than watch Raw. It's not, the product's not grabbing me. But when I was watching it not too long ago, you know, it's been like maybe a month that I haven't been watching it. But when I was watching it, yeah, I agree with you. I think that Jericho and Owens are the best thing on the show. I think they've got an incredible chemistry together. I think Jericho's doing some of, if not the best work he has ever done, as far as character, as far as heat, as far as just getting every syllable out of his mouth over with the fans. So I agree. I think that he is doing some amazing stuff. He is one of the all time greatest. And so his trunks are not hyperbole when it says GOAT on the back of him, because he is one of the greatest of all times. And he is proving that with what he's doing right now, at least up until the last time I saw it about 3-4 weeks ago.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, some guys, they come back and they really kind of harm their legacy. But with Chris, he just seems to keep building on it and building on it and building on it. I mean, I've been a big fan of his, and if you look at it, he's been consistently, you know, good and entertaining for, you know, 20 years now at this point. I mean, I first saw him in 96 in ECW, so yeah, he's been around a long time, and he always finds new ways to reinvent himself.
And that's the key. That's the key. He is constantly reinventing himself. He is constantly adding to his repertoire. He is constantly tweaking his act so that way it never gets stale. He's always adding something to it or doing something slightly different. Or I mean, and everything that he does, he's so smart, and he understands what's going to get over and what doesn't, that everything that he does really, really helps him, helps whatever program he's in. And I think that is a testament to why, when I say, you know, he's doing his great work, I'm not necessarily just talking about in-ring work. I'm talking about everything he does when he is on that on camera. So and him reinventing himself, that's key. That was one of the reasons why Rock got as big as he did back in the day, because he never wanted to settle for just coming out and doing the same things over and over again. He always wanted to tweak it somehow. He always wanted to try new things, add new things, because he knew that, you know, if he didn't keep adding things to get over and to capture the fans' imagination, then eventually he would, you know, his bag of tricks would run dry. But by constantly trying new things, he was constantly adding new tweaks to his act that he could go out and do. So the act as a whole never got stale because you never saw everything all in one shot.
Right. And actually, Rock was in the ring when Jericho debuted. And talking about Jericho made me kind of think of that. What from your perspective, even as a fan, not necessarily working for the company at the time, but what is your favorite debut of a guy? Either he's switching companies or he's coming in for the first time. Like, what are the most memorable debuts you remember?
Wow. I loved and some of these I don't even remember the specifics. Like I remember really being excited about when we debuted Big Show in WWE. Mm-hmm. Because that was like a big, total kayfabe, top secret sort of thing that nobody knew about, that we had in our back pocket. So that was one that we knew was gonna be huge and have huge impact. Trying to think other debuts. I mean, the Jericho debut, you can't really get much bigger than that when you talk about the build for weeks and weeks and weeks up until his debut. You're creating the. You're creating the mystique and who's it going to be? You're creating that excitement. So that way, when the person finally does debut, you've already gotten them over. It's kind of like the theory that Jim Cornette always used to say about, put a guy in a box, have a guy come out of a box at ringside and he's over. Right. So it's like that, but a little bit more, there's a little bit more to it than just having a guy come out of a box, where I understand the theory with that, which is the who is in the box? What's going to come out of the box? What's this going to mean? Who's in it? And you stoke that curiosity until the fans are dying to find out, and then you bring the person out. But I don't know. I would go with the Jericho countdown over a box at ringside any day of the week.
Yeah, that is a secret. Once if a guy's in a box, he comes out, he's automatically over. But you could also have a guy come out of a big egg.
That worked for the gobbledygooker. Yeah. So how can you argue with that?
Real quick, I know we're kind of more talking about present day than older questions, but that's fine.
I'm fine. Yeah, we could just be fluid if you want. Doesn't matter to me.
Well, I was thinking about when Brock Lesnar returned and what a huge deal that was to have him come down, kind of coming off the UFC. And it made me think, what did you think watching the Brock Lesnar-Randy Orton match at SummerSlam and that controversial ending where Brock kind of started really wailing on him with forearms and things like that and busting him open? What were you thinking when you were watching that?
Well, what I was thinking was, the whole thing was bowling shoe ugly. And intentionally so. It had that awkwardness that comes from when something's a shoot. So in my mind, the first thing that's going through my mind is, what is going on? You're trying to think about what you're seeing on several different levels. The level of the work, what the work is, the level of is that work effective, and also the level of is there more to this than just the work?
Yeah.
You always have to default to, if it's happening on camera, it's intentional. Mm-hmm. If we're seeing it with the camera, if the camera is capturing it, it's got to be intentional. That's where you start from. And then you have your exceptions to that rule. But once you start looking at it from that perspective, I'm looking at it and I'm saying, these guys are, not clicking together in the ring and it's just looking ugly. But then when you see what really happened and how much color Randy got and how bad he was bleeding, it's one of those things where you don't really know enough about what's happening until after the fact, when you can get the whole story, when you find out that Randy was busted open from Brock's elbow. And it just, as far as that, I think that, I think that if they want to get color, then just frigging get color. Mm-hmm. Don't do it that way. Don't do it in such a way that you're gonna give the guy a freaking concussion doing it. Just because, nobody cut themselves. So we're in the clear. You're getting color. Whether you wanna say it was unintentional or not, at the end of the day, it is a work. So if somebody goes out there and gets color, whether they use a blade or Brock Lesnar's elbow. If they intended to get color, it's a work. So why don't they do it the safest way possible? Because, you know, Randy just came back from an injury. Yeah. So I don't particularly think that what they did, you know, it had everybody talking, so you can look at it that way. But by the same token, what, you know, the risk, what was it worth it with, you know, the shots that Randy had to take? Because don't, you know, I mean, Brock Lesnar is not a surgeon, so he's not hitting him with such precise, such precision that he's just grazing him just enough to open the skin. He was clobbering him. So, you know, I think that, you know, it was unnecessary. If they wanted to get color, just own it and just do it the old-fashioned way, which is safer for everybody involved. But there's a stigma to it, and because they have shareholders, they can't defend that. So they're going to do it in such a way that they could say, oh, well, you know, nobody cut themselves. He really busted him open. Well, it's not like you didn't know he was going to do that. Don't tell me you didn't know he was going to do that. So then just – If you're going to do it, just do it the safest way possible and take care of the boys in the ring, because sometimes the boys are their own worst enemies anyway. They'll say, oh, I'll do it. Don't worry. I'll be fine. I know how to do it. I'll do it. Because it's like a badge of pride, a badge of honor with, you know, how tough you can be and how much punishment you can take and how you can do to make the work look real. But if you're taking punishment to make the work look real, it's not much of a work. It is real. It's just you know that you're both out there working the fans, but you know the actual physicality isn't worked if you're actually hurting each other. I think that if you go back to Brock's first match when he returned against Cena, where Cena beat him, that I thought was a phenomenal example of how to work that style and make it look real, but it's still being a work, because that, again, that match was also, it was bowling shoe ugly, but it was ugly because it didn't look like two guys in a professional wrestling match. It looked like two guys trying to beat the shit out of each other. Oh, I'm sorry. Can I curse on this? I forget.
Yeah. That's
okay. Oh, fuck. Good. Okay. Yeah, good.
Absolutely.
So yeah. So that's my thoughts on that. I'm like, if they want to do it, fine. But I think, you know, just own it. If you want to get color, then get color. And if there's a problem with that, then deal with that problem. But don't try and say, you know, plead innocent or, you know, plead, you know, ignorance that, oh, we didn't know that was going to happen. Come on. It happened on camera. If you didn't know it was going to happen, we wouldn't have shot it. The camera would have looked away.
It's that time of year when divisions are decided, champions are crowned, and legends are born. It's time for the NFL playoffs. You've waited and watched all year as your team rose to the top or fell to the bottom, but now it's your turn to win big. You've heard the name just about everywhere, MyBookie. They're the industry's leading online sportsbook and casino, and it's not hard to understand why, with thousands of lines to bet on all your favorite sports. NFL, NBA, and college ball, check, check, and check. MMA and soccer, they've got all the latest odds, period. Take advantage of MyBookie's prop builder and live in-game betting, where every single run, throw, and touchdown is another chance for you to put cash in your pocket. Visit their mobile-friendly website today and get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000 by using the promo code CREATIVE when you make your first deposit. The best part is they make it simple with a variety of ways to deposit instantly, including credit card, bank transfer, Bitcoin, and more. Whether you're at home or on the go, on your laptop or your phone, it's not too late to make your New Year's resolution a resolution to get paid. Bet, win, and get paid at MyBookie. And don't forget, use the promo code CREATIVE to get matched halfway up to $1,000 on your first deposit.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
Chumba.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. I think there's, you know, there's some attraction to it because, like you mentioned, the match with Cena when he first came back, and there was a moment on Raw where they were wrestling and rolling around, and the wrestlers came to separate them, and John came up and his mouth was bleeding, and it makes you go, oh my God, what is Brock doing? Is he just came back? Is he, do they not like each other and blah blah blah? You know, but I also agree with and that's where I was going to go with the question actually, like why not just use a blade instead of putting a guy's health at risk. I mean, it just seems like we're trying not to be viewed as barbaric, but in the meantime, we're doing it in a much more barbaric way.
Right, exactly. They're saying, well, we don't want to be barbaric, so we're not going to use a surgeon's scalpel to open a little nick so we get some blood. We're going to have a big Neanderthal use his doomsday-like, rock-like elbows to bust his head open, you know, to crack his skull so that way some blood comes out. But, you know, we would never cut ourselves because that would be barbaric.
Exactly. to change tracks a little bit, when you went to WCW with Vince Russo and October of 99, and what I want to ask you first was, and I'll kind of go around about way to get to this, a lot of people always say, well, what happened to Bret Hart in WCW, why didn't they use him better and all that, but when you guys came in, Bret was almost immediately on top. He was world champion, and one of the things that Eric Bischoff has said quite a few times in interviews and not stand-ups, but the one-man shows kind of thing, is that, oh, well, Bret wasn't really into it, and he was a shell of himself after the screw job and his brother passing away. But when you guys were there, you used Bret right on top, and you gave him the championship and everything like that, and he was world champion again and seemed happy. Well, what was your experience like with Bret at that time? Did you agree with Bischoff's assessment of his mind, or do you think Bret was maybe he was a little bit down in the dumps because he's been underutilized at first?
It's hard for me to say entirely, but that's because I never met Bret before I worked with him in WCW.
Oh, that's right.
So I don't have a before to compare the after to. But what I will say is that, you know, I mean, maybe he was a shell of himself. He definitely, they're always, the one thing I always took away with Bret was always really good to me. He was always very, you know, very respectful with me, and I always was very respectful with him, and we had a few, you know, a few conversations with each other, and we worked together on some of the stories and the angles that we were doing. But the one thing I will say with Bret was there always was kind of like, there was like a certain sadness about him. There was always like a darkness, a glumness about him. He was not a guy like if he was not a guy who was laughing and joking around and being loud and boisterous like most of the boys are back in the locker room. Bret was very quiet. He was very serious. He didn't joke around as much, you know, or at least I didn't see it that much there. So as far as him being a shell of himself and being depressed about how he had been used, I could certainly see that. I mean, when we came in and, you know, we had plans to put him on top and keep him on top for a while because we were doing like a new NWO incarnation that we were starting that he was going to be at the heart of, no pun intended. That was lame. I didn't even mean that. But he was going to be at the heart of that NWO incarnation. But then he got the injured working with Goldberg, and that was all she wrote with that. But yeah, I would say that when I did work with him, there was always it was never light and breezy working with Bret. Bret was always very serious. He always had a lot of questions. He never really seemed to be enjoying himself. Now, maybe he just didn't like where he was. Maybe he didn't like being in WCW. Maybe he didn't like the idea of working with Vince and I. I have no idea. I'm sure that probably had something to do with it because this is still not too long after Owen's death. And I can't say I wasn't in, you know, I'm not in Bret's head, so I don't know what his actual thoughts were and what his opinions were. And if he held personally, you know, felt that we had some responsibility in that tragic happening with what happened with Owen. But maybe that had something to do with it. But I don't know. I really don't know. All I know is that when I did work with him, like I said, there always was a certain, you know, a distance, a sadness, a kind of a glum kind of pallor that he had all the time whenever I dealt with him.
Another guy that came over just around the time that you and Vince went over to WCW actually was Jeff Jarrett, and he also was a member of that new NWO angle at the end of the year. You know, there was always rumors that Jeff left the WWF because Steve Austin didn't want to work with him, and I think they both commented on that. What are your thoughts on that situation, and also on Jeff as a performer and how he was in WCW, and what you thought of his performance there?
Jeff, to me, Jeff was always can you hear me okay? I just heard a little fuzz in my ears.
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, cool. I just want to make sure I wasn't fading on you. Jeff was always, to me, Jeff was always a total pro. He was always somebody who was one of the easiest guys to work with. He was, he was a technician in the ring. He delivered on his promos. I think he never quite clicked with the fans the way that we would like to have seen him click with the fans. That said, he was always a go-to guy for us because, you know, on both personal and professional levels, we worked really well together, all three of us. He was very close with Vince at that time because Vince, you know, did all those Ain't I Great vignettes with him when he was first coming up in WWF. So that, you know, that was where their relationship kind of started, and it just blossomed from there. And then I always worked very well with him. I always thought it was a tragedy that that Austin refused to work with him. I get it. I get where Austin was coming from, because Austin felt that with, you know, his time in I guess it was USWA, that his time in USWA, that Jarrett kind of starved him out.
Right.
And never gave him opportunities and never, you know, ever gave him push and basically, you know, worked him like a dog and didn't pay him like he should have. And so Austin's attitude was that he would never do anything that would pad Jeff Jarrett's pocket. So that was why he, you know, had no desire to work with him and no desire to do anything with him, because he refused to be responsible for getting Jeff over in any way, shape, or form, which to me was kind of a shame, because that, you know, if they could have worked together, I think that he and Austin, especially when you consider the history with them and the way that we were booking TV at the time, we would have run with that, with their shoot history with each other. That could have made Jeff, and that would have made everybody more money. But, you know, it never happened, and as a result of that, I think that Jeff never really got to where he could have gotten if he had had a high-profile program with Austin at the time. But by the same token, I can't really blame Austin, because, you know, I mean, you could say it was a long time ago, and he should have given him a chance, and it wasn't Jerry Jarrett, it was Jeff Jarrett that he was taking it out on.
Yeah.
But still, I see where he was coming from.
I feel like, just as a viewer, that at least that would have injected someone different into that main event scene. And it seemed like at that time there was a lot of Austin Undertaker. I mean, they main evented quite a few shows in 98, 99. So at least that would have been something fresh with Austin and Jarrett. But, you know, didn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, the person who ended up getting injected into that scene was Kane, and look at the, right. You know, it made Kane a huge star at the time. Kane was, you know, one of the biggest, you know, fastest rising new stars in the company at that time, because he was in that high profile three way program with Austin and Taker, which was that was just a blast to work with too.
What were your experiences like with Bill Goldberg during your time in WCW?
My experiences with Bill Goldberg were limited again, because Goldberg was one of those guys who was kind of, you know, difficult, quote unquote, to work with in terms of what he wanted to do and didn't want to do and would be willing to do and wouldn't be willing to do. He didn't really agree with our style of writing TV. And so, you know, he, so as a result of that, that kind of fell to Vince a lot of the time to work with him and politic him and deal with him and try and convince him of what we were trying to do. Goldberg with me, he was always usually very, you know, professional with me. But there was one time I remember we were in Australia towards the end of WCW. It was like the fall. If WCW ended in 2001,
right.
So this was the fall of 2000. We were doing a tour in Australia and we were doing some TVs there. And I remember that the TVs at that time, this was, you know, Vince was still in charge of the creative, but he didn't come to Australia for whatever reason. So it was Terry Taylor and myself who were basically running the creative end of the tour in terms of the TV and what we were shooting and what was going out there. And it was just, and this was also, you know, the company was coughing up blood. There were all the rumors of, is it being bought? Is it being sold? Is this happening? What's going on? Are we going to have a job? You know, everybody, you know, in the back of their mind is kind of on edge. And I remember that there, I don't even remember what exactly happened, but it was one of the TVs, and there was some segment that Goldberg was involved in. It was something that Vince scripted, or rather the committee with Vince, you know, it was his vision.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember what the hell it was, but I remember it was the sort of thing that Goldberg, he really wasn't down with it. He really didn't want to do it. And I think Terry Taylor and myself managed to convince him. We tweaked it, whatever, reworked it, whatever, and sent him out. And he agreed to do it. Well, he went out and he did it, and something went wrong. And I don't remember what went wrong, but the fans didn't react to it. And I remember he came backstage after that segment. And I was at gorilla position, and he got right in my face, and he was screaming at me because he was furious over what happened out there, and he was kind of taking it out on me. And in my mind at this point, this is, you know, I was, you know, nervous too. I didn't know what the hell was going on with the company. So all I was thinking was, oh, please, just one shot. Just take one shot at me. I won't have to work anymore. I'll be able to pay off my condo. Just take one shot at me. That's all I want. But he never did. So, but other than that, that was the only time I really had a direct problem with Bill. I never really had, you know, a ton of dealings with him. Usually I would end up producing the guys that were lower on the tier, and the guys that were at the very top of the card, they worked directly with Vince a lot more on the day of the TV shows.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumba.
ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
When someone is hurt in a truck accident, the one question everyone has is, why did this terrible collision happen? To answer that question takes an experienced team of lawyers and experts. Not everyone has this type of experience. At Colombo Law, we are truck injury lawyers. It's what we do every day. When someone is hurt by a truck, Colombo Law is the law firm people call to get answers. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
Do you want to go behind the scenes at World Championship Wrestling and find out what really happened? From one of the greatest minds in the history of the business, the infamous booker behind WCW's success with the New World Order. Other podcasts weren't there. Let's clean up the fantasy bullshit, give you real facts and real stories with the Taskmaster himself. Yes, this is Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan, available on the Creative Control Network.
Have you, I know you said you haven't watched a little bit in about a month, but have you seen any of the Goldberg promos or his,
I saw his first promo back.
Yeah.
which I thought was excellent. I thought it was really good. As a matter of fact, it was the sort of thing where when I heard he was coming back, like for me, nothing against Bill, but it just didn't excite me. It didn't excite me as a fan, because it's kind of like been there, done that. And as a fan, I'm a fan of it. I'm a fan of it from the standpoint that I like watching it because I want to see history and I want to see the future taking shape in front of me. And I want to see guys coming up and getting established and making their name for themselves and getting over and then running with it. And so for me, I was not excited about his return because it's just it's a short-term thing and it's not going to have long-term ramifications, or at least in my opinion, I wasn't thinking it was going to have any long-term ramifications on the product. It's not like he's going to come, they're going to build the company around him. It's not like he's going to come in and they're going to put the belt on him, any of that stuff. So I was like, meh about his return. His promo on his first night back, I mean, it didn't hurt that he had a crowd that was rabid for him too. Mm-hmm. I thought he did a fantastic job. I thought that promo, it showed the right amount of personality, the right amount of fire, the right amount of appreciation, the right amount of love. I thought it was a dynamite promo. And then the next week when Brock and Paul Heyman went out there, I was just like, oh, this is what I was expecting. The reaction. So, and now I haven't seen it since. And I didn't even see the show where Brock and Paul cut the promo, but I saw the video on the internet like the next day or 2 days later. So I don't even know what it's been like now, but are people excited about this or has it already gotten old and people are reacting against it?
This past Monday, neither one of them was there. They just did a video. But the week before he came out, they used him in the first segment on Halloween. So I don't know what the sense was of that. But he came out. He did good on the mic. The crowd was with him again. And they had him threaten Paul a little bit. And then Rusev came out, and he speared and jackhammered Rusev. Slipped at one point, looked a little, but he got it back, and that was the only hiccup really. But it made me think, like, you know, you better get some ring time because you haven't done it in so long, and now you're going to be expected to have this big match with Brock. You know, I thought it was cool because it was one of the last guys left that you hadn't seen that could possibly come back, and it's like, hey, it's Ultimate Warrior, it's this or that. Goldberg is one of those last guys, but I still have a trouble seeing how they're going to work out this match. But I've had low expectations before, and matches like that I had low expectations for Sting and Hunter because I just didn't think, you know, that Sting would be able to have that kind of match at WrestleMania because his recent TNA stuff hadn't been that good. But then he came out and hit a home run, so maybe that'll be the same situation with Brock and Goldberg.
I hope so. I'd like to see a good match between the two of them. I'm looking forward to seeing it for that reason. Also, I like watching Brock's matches because he's like one of the guys. He's the only guy you watch nowadays, and you're like, okay, he's the real deal. Yeah. And you never know what's going to happen in one of his matches. They're always unpredictable for that reason. So I'm really interested to see where they go with this. For my money, I'm hoping that they, I'm hoping that they keep riding the Brock train, because Brock to me is a lot more potential money. I mean, I know he's also a lot of potential headaches too, yeah, but he's a lot more potential money because he is the real deal. He is legit, and he does have that aura about him that very few, if any, other wrestlers on the roster have. So they need that. That's what makes him an attraction. So I'm hoping that they keep him strong somewhat. But who knows what they're going to do? Because especially if this is Bill's one match, is he going to come back to lose a match? Also, mm-hmm, knowing who Bill is, I think I would kill to be a fly on the wall in those discussions.
Well, one thing they have to fight against is the matches in Canada, and Brock's a Canadian.
Bizarro land.
Brock's a Canadian. Yeah, Bizarro land. Brock's a Canadian citizen now. And just from being, they had a couple shows in Canada when you were with OVW, and they don't like Goldberg. So they didn't like him before he injured Brett. And especially, Canada, like you said, Bizarro land. They don't let the screw job go. They don't let the stuff like that. They boo Shawn Michaels years later. So it might be a little tough for Bill up there, but, it should be interesting.
Maybe what maybe what they'll do is maybe they've secretly worked out a second, you know, a return match, and maybe Goldberg will, you know, put Brock over this first time, give Brock the win in Canada, but then have a rematch at the Rumble, yeah. and then that's where Goldberg will walk away with his win.
You know, we talked a little bit about Bret Hart and about Goldberg and how, you know, they're kind of particular about their stuff, and you know, another guy who's rumored to be like that was Roddy Piper, and Roddy was also a big part of that Starrcade in 1999, where the NWO started to come back and all that. What were your experiences like working with Roddy? Because again, you had him figured in big time with he came out as the referee that night.
Yeah, that was another one. And again, it's like these are a lot of the guys that ultimately Vince ended up dealing with.
Oh, okay.
Like the first time I met Roddy, I was dealing with somebody else at the time backstage day of. It was the first time I had met Roddy. And I forget who his handler guy that he traveled with came and found me, and he said, Roddy wants to talk to you and Vince. And I said, well, Vince is off with, I don't know, Goldberg or whatever right now, but I'll go talk to Roddy in the meantime until Vince is, you know, and maybe I can help him. And if not, then Vince can talk to him when he's done. So I went into Roddy's dressing room, and Roddy was very respectful. And, you know, we introduced ourselves, we shook hands, and he said, look, this is, I want to talk to you. I've got some things in my mind about what, you know, I want to, what I'd like to say or do out there. I've been working up some things. And I said, okay, great. Let's hear it. And he said, all right. He said, so now you guys are kind of like the powers to be here, right? And everybody misspoke and called it the powers to be instead of the powers that be.
Right.
And I said, yeah. He said, okay. He said, do you have a thick skin? You know, you're going to need kind of thick skin. And at that time I said, look, you know, with everything that we had been through at that point, between WWE, between the sheets tearing us apart, between coming to WCW, all the politics and all that. And I said, yeah, we've got thick skin. You know, don't worry. Tell me what you got. So he starts cutting this promo to me and, you know, telling me what he wanted to say when he went out there. And he said, the first thing out of his mouth was, so you guys are the guys who killed my cousin Owen Hart.
Oh, boy.
And at that point, I said, in my mind, I went, check, please. I said, all right, yeah, this is way above my pay grade.
Yeah.
I said, you're going to definitely need to talk to Vince about this. I wasn't even going to get into it with him. I wasn't even going to try and do it. I was, you know, I was hoping that I could maybe help him and free up Vince from dealing with other people, but I had no idea that I had just stepped into such a political minefield with him about 30 seconds after meeting him. So I was like, you know what? You're definitely going to need to talk to Vince because he's definitely going to want to hear this.
Yeah.
So let me go get him. So that was the extent of that, because then when Vince went to deal with him, then I went to go deal with, you know, whoever else I was dealing with that day.
What's odd is he finally used that. I don't think you were with TNA at the time, but he used it on Vince in the ring. They had a confrontation. Yeah, he brought that line out, and it didn't, you know, I don't know what he expected from it, but the crowd was just kind of like, it was just quiet, and like, you know,
yeah.
People like, couldn't believe they heard it, but.
I think he might have been expecting, you know, that's heat. You know, he's expecting that to get some serious heat. But I think that, the heat that came back kind of his way, because people are like, oh, don't go there. Why are you saying that? Why are you even bringing that up? Because it is such a – that's not something people want to be reminded of when they're watching a show, because they're trying to be entertained, and you're bringing up something that is just so serious and so heartbreaking. So that's not the right kind of heat.
I wanted to see if you remembered shortly after Starrcade, I believe it was the following month before the pay-per-view, is when they came down and said, hey, we're going to have a committee now, and when Vince left. And the following month at Super Brawl, there was that Tank Abbott match. And there was some controversy with Tank because, you know, the rumors were, hey, these guys want to make Tank world champion because, you know, Brett was hurt and Jarrett was hurt and they needed a big surprise. And that was supposedly the catalyst for them saying, no, we're going to have a committee now because we don't really like that idea. But what I want to ask you about was Tank's match at Super Brawl. I believe it was against a guy named Big Al. Do you remember this? The stage match?
Yeah, I vaguely remember. I mean, I remember it.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, snippets of it. I think that Big Al was a friend of
like
Tank's. Yeah, they had a skins match, right?
Which was for the
leather jacket. It was like a leather jacket on a pole match.
Yep.
And that was the one. All I remember, this was back when it was the committee, which was myself, Kevin Sullivan, Bob Mould, Mike Graham, Kevin Nash sat in with the committee. Dusty sat in with the committee, I think. No, Dusty didn't sit in with the committee. I'm thinking of something else. And I'm trying to think. I think there were a couple other people. And this was back when shit was going on that I had no idea why we were doing it.
Yeah.
We would sit around the committee meetings. We would sit around and everybody, we would come up with what would be good matches to have and what would be the return on the match. Like how would we bring it back or what would the next step? But then we would come up with what the matches were for the show. And then the committee would check out. The committee would leave and leave me to actually come up with a show to write around these matches. Like I would have to put it together and figure out what the story was and what the vignettes were that we were shooting and what the scenes were backstage and what interviews we were doing and writing all of that. So I was at that point, I was just trying to keep my head above water and just keep cranking out the shows based on just a list of matches, which is why admittedly a lot of the shows absolutely sucked because of the fact that all I had with me, all I had was a list of matches and finishes, and I had to come up with something to tie the show together. So sometimes it worked, a lot of the times it didn't, but at least we got the shows out there, and that's what my job was, and that's why I was working around the clock, because I'd be in with the committee, and then they would clock out because they did what they were going to do, and then my work started. Which was, the process of actually writing the shows, which took hours and hours and hours trying to come up with this shit.
Yeah.
So that match, I don't even remember how we got to it. I think it was Tank brought the guy up to us, to I think Sullivan, and said, "Hey, I got this buddy. I want to do the match with him." Next thing I know, we're doing it. and so the one thing I do remember was, at the end of the match, Tank went over. That guy, Big Al, was down selling outside the ring.
Yeah.
And Tank reached into his jacket and pulled out a knife. And he put it to the guy's – he put it to Al's throat.
Yep.
Nobody knew this was going to happen. This was something Tank did on his own. Tank had this idea. And all of a sudden, next to me, because I'm in gorilla position, next to me I hear Sullivan go, "Get the camera off! Get the camera off him!" Because he put a knife to this guy's throat. This is WCW, where standards and practices were making it so, we couldn't even show a guy having a beer. So showing somebody with a knife to another guy's throat was just unheard of. And it was just Tank thought it would be cool. And he was like, afterwards they were yelling at him backstage, and he was like, "Oh, sorry. I thought it'd be pretty cool. So, all right, whatever." And we never saw Big Al or a skins match again.
The thing is, for people that are listening, it's Super Brawl 2000 if you want to go back and look at it. But it wasn't like a pocket knife.
It was
knife.
An
it
ugly
was like,
match, too.
It was like Crocodile Dundee. Like, this is a knife, It was the biggest knife I've ever seen that he pulled out of his throat.
Yeah, and then the match was, if I remember correctly, the match was the absolute shits.
Oh, yeah.
Because Tank, Tank was okay when he was in there with guys who knew what they were doing. Now you had Tank in there, and Tank had to carry the match with a guy who wasn't a worker, who didn't know anything about it, and Tank, who was very new at it. So that's the other reason why the match was just absolutely terrible and ill-advised. I don't know why we did it, but I guess maybe Tank just convinced them that they'd be able to, that they'd be able to go out there and just beat the shit out of each other, because that's what they do, because they're buddies.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I spent a lot of time with Tank in WCW because, quite honestly, there were times when I would, hang with him at the bar after the show because I didn't want Tank to get arrested.
Oh, right.
So because Tank was a guy who he was a fun guy to be around. I had some fun times with Tank, but Tank was a guy who liked to drink a lot and he could turn on a dime. So, I remember we were in Vegas once and we were at a craps table And Tank, I was walking through the casino, and Tank was at some craps table. I heard all this commotion. I didn't know what it was. And as I get close to the craps table, I'm like, oh, it's Tank. Tank was hot. Tank was betting big on the table. And he pulls me over physically. He says, you play craps? And I had never played craps before. I was always a blackjack player, never played craps. Yeah. I said, dude, I have never played. I can't figure it out. I don't know what's going on. He's like, bet behind me. Just follow me. You're going to make some money. I was like, okay, I had just won some money playing some blackjack. So I was like, okay, fine, whatever. And Tank is ordering drinks and he's saying, okay, bet here, bet here, bet here. And we're making money. All of a sudden, this other guy at the other end of the table comes up and he starts betting, and the table and the throws start getting cold. Mm. And it start losing money. And all of a sudden, Tank starts going, it's that guy, pointing, yelling across the table. That guy's the devil. You're the devil. And I was like, okay, hey, Tank, what do you say? What do you say we go somewhere else? We go, yeah. Let me buy you a drink. Let's not drink these watered down shit here. Let's go to the bar and I'll get you a Grey Goose and cranberry or something. Mm-hmm. Because I was petrified, because we had a show the next night, and I was petrified that Tank was going to make a scene and end up getting arrested, and then we wouldn't have him for the show the next night.
Right. Oh my God. Coming aboard as a sponsor with Creative Control Daily this week, I am happy to join forces with the Collar and Elbow brand. Collar and Elbow, where wrestling passion meets street fashion. Now, I'm sure my listeners have heard of the Collar and Elbow brand, brought to you by the great Al Snow, where the idea is to make cool shirts for wrestling fans. You know, cool shirts to wear out, cool shirts to wear to the gym, cool shirts for wrestling fans to not be ashamed to wear in public. You know, initially I got a Collar and Elbow shirt and hat due to the fact that Collar and Elbow became associated with Keeping It 100 with Conan. So I got them free, on the cuff, on the arm, if you will. What I found from there is the shirts were excellent. Excellent material, the fit was great, and the fitted hat was pretty sweet as well. So, go check out collarandelbowbrand.com, and I'm sure you'll agree. There's a lot of cool designs on there that you wouldn't be ashamed to wear out of the house. And the material is extremely comfortable, just for lounging around in, maybe working out, whatever you want to do. And lucky for you, the Creative Control Daily listeners, I've got a deal for you. That's right, to get you 10% off your purchase. It'll get you a discount off some awesome Collar and Elbow gear, as well as help the show out. 10% off with the code CCDAILY. CCDAILY. That's right, 10% off at collarandelbowbrand.com with the code CCDAILY. Don't be afraid to represent. Support the show. Support Al Snow and his great company, Collar and Elbow. You won't regret buying their stuff. Honest to God, they're the most comfortable shirts I own. Another guy, now that you mentioned Tank, makes me think of, you know, a guy that's rumored to have a short temper. And, he was utilized a lot towards the end of WCW. He became world champion, and that was Big Papa Pump, Scotty Steiner. And, I got a time for a couple more questions, I think. We're at about 50 minutes. But Scott Steiner stories, I got to get them. What was Scotty like to be around? What was your experience working with him?
Scotty was a guy who, you know, you get him in the right mood. And Scotty was a lot of fun. Scotty's a funny guy. Scotty is he knows who he is. He knows his image. He knows how intimidating he can be. But he can be a really funny guy. That said, you know, like I said, you get him in the right mood. But Scotty's also a guy who, you know, isn't in the right mood all the time.
Right.
And he's got a very, like you said, very short temper. There was one time I remember being backstage, one of the first shows at WCW. Something happened. It was a Nitro. And again, because it's so long ago, I just have these images in my mind. I don't remember the context, but I remember something happened out in the ring that Scotty was pissed off about. And all I remember was seeing him backstage throwing a tantrum. But when Scott Steiner threw a tantrum, he was picking up these huge lighting trusses. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The huge steel triangular, like a grid type trusses.
Yeah.
And throwing it against the wall, and this thing was easily about 15 feet long. Mm. It had to weigh hundreds of pounds, and he picked one up and threw it against the wall like it was an aluminum can.
Yeah.
So the other Steiner story, and I've told this before. I don't remember where, but there was one Nitro that if I ever wrote a movie or something about it, this would be the Nitro that I would be, that would be the big finish sequence in the movie. This was when we still had the committee. Russo wasn't there. Eric wasn't there. And it was the committee. I forget where we were. But we were, wherever we had Sid at this point. We had Sid Udy, and Sid was at this point, we were, you know, going to put the belt on him. Because, you know, he was a star, he was big, he looked phenomenal at this point. We had been talking to him. He claimed he was ready to work and all that. And, you know, the committee and Sullivan, they wanted to, you know, put the belt on him. So, okay, so we're going to put the belt on Sid. So we're at this Nitro and we're in the process of building him, you know, building him up toward where he was going to get the belt. And we had a show written that, you know, he was in the entire show from top to bottom. I am getting to Scott Steiner. Don't worry. So Sid was in the show from top to bottom. I forget what the context was, what happened, but Sid wasn't happy about something. And about 4:30 that afternoon, he said, you know what? I'm going home. I'm not doing this. I'm checking out. So he left. And we had a show that was going live. I think we were in Central Time. It was going live in a couple of hours. And he was in the entire show. Without him, it was a house of cards. The whole show fell apart. Mm. Like matches, segments, everything. There was like maybe out of 11 segments, there were maybe 3 segments that were still not affected by it. Because it was, you know, I really went out of my way with this to wrap that story throughout the entire episode. So now we didn't have a show. So I had to rewrite the entire show from scratch. And it was at the point where segment one was out live in front of the crowd, and I'm frantically writing segment six. Mm. And I'm telling Terry Taylor and Jeremy Borash, get me this guy, this guy, and this guy. Bring them to gorilla position so I can tell them what they're doing in segment four, because nobody knew what they were doing. Wow. Because that was the thing. We didn't know what the show was going to be. So we had like a quick meeting, like an hour, to try and figure out what the show is going to be. And then I had to write it, and I'm writing it on the fly. So as the show was happening, I was writing it. Meanwhile, so I had written a promo for Scott Steiner. And Scott Steiner, we were working toward a program with him and Flair. Steiner didn't want to work with
him. Yeah.
So I had given him a promo, you know, for him to go out, and it was a promo to get some heat on Flair and to build toward that program. So I had written the Flair promo, and I said, look, here's the bullet points. Just go out, hit this. This is what we need. So I'm at gorilla position. I'm frantically scribbling one of the later segments, you know, trying to stay on top of the show so we don't run out of show before the show is over. And Steiner goes out to the ring and he starts cutting his promo. And after a minute, I stop and I start listening to what he's saying. He's not saying anything about Ric Flair. Steiner didn't want to work with Flair. Steiner was looking at Flair at that point as, hey, he's the old guy. I don't want to work with him. I want to work with somebody, not Flair, because right. What you're going to do is you're going to put Flair over on me, and I don't want to do that. So he goes out there and he starts cutting a promo on DDP.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. He's cutting a promo on DDP. He's shooting his own angle. Yeah. But the thing is, he's shooting, and he's shooting on Kimberly too. And uh-huh. He's trash talking Kimberly, and then next thing, so I'm like, oh Jesus, okay, I'll deal with this later. I've still got a show to write. And I go back to writing. Next thing I know, I look up, Steiner's still out there going on, and I look up and DDP is standing there waiting uh-huh. for Steiner to come back after that. Steiner came back and the two of them got into a brutal brawl backstage at Gorilla Position. I'm there scribbling the show, trying to put it together, and 10 feet away, Scott Steiner and DDP are rolling around on the floor with about 8 dudes trying to separate them.
Wow.
And it was some of the best action all night. But I mean, it's a testament to Page that he was going to just stand right up to Steiner, who was, you know, a bear.
Yeah.
And it is a testament to Steiner, because Steiner didn't want to do what we had for him. So Steiner just went out and did what he wanted to do, and he didn't give a shit. So yeah, that was a rough day at the office.
And that's two. I mean, obviously Steiner's a big guy, but that's two big fellas rolling around because, you know, compared to Steiner, but people don't realize Page is still 6'5 and probably 250 or something at that point before he, you know, started doing the yoga and everything. But to close out, because we're coming up to the end here, I guess the final question, since we spent a lot of time with WCW, was what were your memories of the final day of the final Nitro? And at that point in time, back in 2001, what did you think that your future was going to be in professional wrestling? Was there any thoughts across your mind of reaching back out to the WWF? I mean, I know Russo eventually tried to work there for a couple of days and it didn't work out because I've had him on the show talking about it. But was that ever in your mind as well to check in with WWF?
No, actually, I didn't want to go back to the WWF. I didn't want to be owned by them. I didn't want to. I had had my fill of WWF. It was at the point where towards the end of WCW, I was speaking with the WCW attorney after, you know, the purchase happened and everything, and they were, you know, figuring out who was going where and what contracts were assumable and what contracts weren't assumable once they bought the company. And I knew that my contract was assumable, you know, that they could have taken me as long as they paid me according to the terms of my contract, and they could have done whatever they wanted with me. So I told the lawyer for WCW when she was negotiating with them and dealing with the closure, I said, look, if it comes up in discussion with WWF, or I think it was WWE at this point, I said, if it comes up, you know, do whatever you can. If you wouldn't mind, you know, tell them I've been a huge pain in the ass. Tell them they don't want me. Tell them this, tell them that. But just I don't want to go back to work for them. If I wanted to work for them, I would still be working for them.
Yeah.
So I had no desire to go back to that environment, especially after I had defected to the enemy to begin with. So I know the score. I know how they operate. And I know that I would have been punished if I went back there. And I just wasn't going to play that bullshit. So I said to her, you know, if you wouldn't mind, do that. And she said, okay, I think you're being silly, but all right, I'll see what I can do. And then like the next week she called me back and she said, oh my God, they did want you. And yeah. So she dealt with it in such a way that they didn't assume my contract and I got paid out the balance of my contract. But yeah, I knew that if I had gone back there, there certainly would have been some retribution for having had the audacity to defect to the enemy when I did. But as far as that last day, that was surreal. It was really surreal, you know, going backstage and seeing Shane McMahon and Bruce Pritchard show up and Jerry Briscoe, and it was just really weird. I didn't know what my future was at this point. You know, I didn't want to go back to WWE. WCW was gone. I actually, to be quite honest, I went into a depression after this because I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, I had been a TV writer for years before that. You know, scripted TV. Well, scripted, you know, at comedy.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. So I had done that for years. But, you know, because I was always a comedy writer, you know, I was in my late 30s at this point, and I was like, what, am I going to go back to L.A. for the last 3 years of my career? Because once you hit 40, it gets harder and harder to get work in comedy. So I didn't know what I was going to do. So, I was pretty lost, and I was pretty bummed out. So I, you know, after that happened, I stayed in Atlanta. I got paid out the balance of my contract, which went through that following October. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you know, I developed a friendship with Randy Savage at that point, and he and I were, you know, trying to see if there was anything to put together. Like he was keen on getting back into it at that point, and he wanted to find. Essentially, he wanted to find a money mark that would fund a promotion that he could kind of be in charge of. And I was kind of working with him, and I was flying down to Florida a lot to work with Randy and brainstorm with him and meet people and things like that. So once my contract was up, you know, we just moved down to Florida for about 6 months because I thought that's where I'm going to end up working. And then that's when TNA happened. So I ended up working with TNA in the early days, and that's where I got back into wrestling. But at that point, I had no idea what the hell I was going to do. I was kind of lost, and it took me a while to find out until I moved to Chicago in 2002, 2003, and started teaching. But before that, I was just kind of floating around figuring out what the hell I wanted to do. And it wasn't fun, but yeah. I'm in a much better place now, much better place now.
But I think what a lot of people don't know, and I don't think it's too widely known, is that while you're in Florida, you actually helped Ghost write Randy Savage's rap album as well. So.
No, yeah, I wish I could take some credit on that. I did hear Be a Man, you know, probably before anybody else did, but at that point, no, I wasn't that, but that was, I did go to an Aerosmith concert with Randy and Brian Adams, you know, which is just so bizarre because like two of the guys that I spent most of my time with when I was in Florida are gone now.
Yeah.
And it's just so surreal. But that's, you know, that's the wrestling business, I guess.
Yeah. I remember that a little bit, seeing Randy pop up, trying to do like doing online matches and things like that. But, one more quick question.
Sure.
You know, there's actually a big market for wrestling books, and I think publishers kind of laugh at that. But when you think about it, Jericho's got 3 books. Foley's got, you know, several. Vince Russo has 2. Everybody's got a book. Have you ever thought about writing a book about your time in pro wrestling?
I've thought about it only to say no.
Yeah.
Just because of the fact – and the reason is – I don't want to write a book because my memory is the shits. Like I was saying earlier, like I have memories of moments, but in terms of context, it's a blur. Mm-hmm. So I would not really want to write a book because I don't know if I could remember enough to make it the book that I would want it to be, in that, you know, I don't want to be making shit up, you know, just to fill the gaps in between the stuff that I do remember and the context that I, you know, in a lot of instances didn't have. You know, there's stuff I do remember, but I don't know if I have enough of a solid through line to actually write an entire book about it. But you know, there were times when I had said, no, I'll never write a book because I don't want to go down that road again. I don't want to relive those moments, some of them. And that's still true to a certain extent, because there's plenty of things that I really don't feel like dwelling on.
Right.
But just the bottom line is, you know, just admitting my own shortcoming, I don't trust my memory being cohesive enough to fill in the gaps between the stuff that I remember vividly. And if I can't do that, and if I can't put out a book that I feel 100% confident is an accurate representation, at least from my perspective, an accurate representation, I don't want to do that. I don't know how some of these people do it. I don't know how some of these people have memories of so many things. No. But you know, that maybe that's just my weakness. I don't know.
I think Brett carried around like boxes of notes and things like that for, you know, he always and a tape recorder and, you know, but, hey man, I really appreciate you coming back on. I think the hour went pretty quick. You know, I always appreciate you coming on early on the show. I was only like I said, a dozen episodes in, you know, and you know, you didn't know me, but you gave me a chance, and I've always appreciated that. And, it was really great having you back on.
It's my pleasure, Joe, and I really appreciate you asking me, and yeah. I would love to do this again in less than 80 episodes too. So
okay.
maybe we can do this episode, you know, like 172 instead
yeah.
of 182.
Is there anything you want to plug? Are you going to be popping on MLW radio or anything like that anytime soon?
You know, I probably will pop up on MLW again at some point in the near future. Like I said, I'm coming off of a really busy fall where I've had a much higher rate of students in my classes than I typically do. So that basically has killed all the free time that I've had, because I have so much time I have to grade assignments. So I haven't been on MLW in a while. I know that I had, you know, Alex Greenfield has reached out to me a couple of times in the past couple of months, and I've had to I've had to say, I'm sorry, I can't do it right now. I'm in the weeds. But I'm sure I will be popping up on MLW, on one of their shows, either the flagship show or MSL and Sullivan or Alex Greenfield's Writer's Room. Yeah. I may pop up on one of Vince's show, Vince Russo's shows over on the brand.
Right.
So I also pop up from time to time, or I had been propping up from time to time on WrestleZone Daily. Now that it's WrestleZone Weekly, you know, I'll probably do that again at some point in the future too, because I'm very close with Nick Hausman, who runs that over there.
Right.
So those are the places where I tend to be a regular irregular, if that makes sense. And then if anybody wants to follow me on Twitter, I can be found on Twitter at the Ed Ferrara, and Ferrara is spelled F as in Frank, E-R-R-A-R-A.
I always get that right, so.
Yes, you do, to your credit, but you're a writer, so to your credit.
Well, hey, thanks so much for coming on, and I appreciate it. And hopefully we get to do it again. We kind of did some WCW, maybe next time we could cover some TNA, and
And we're going to get a beer in Orlando.
We're absolutely going to get a beer in Orlando.
When you're down here for Mania.
Yep. And I'm looking forward to that, definitely. I'll be following you to all the Wally Manies and things like that. So
make a
weekend of it. All right, well, take care, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
All right.